We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, welcome to the Papers podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. In this series, we speak to authors of papers published in one of ACAM's three journals. These are the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry, commonly known as JCPP, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health, known as CAM, and JCPP Advances. Today I'm interviewing senior researcher Dr. Britt Mortholst, Associate Professor at the Department of Clinical Medicine in the Faculty of Health at the University of Copenhagen and a member of the Danish Research Institute for Suicide Prevention. Britt is the first author of the JCPP Advances paper, Internet-Based Intervention, Emotion Regulation Individual Therapy for Adolescents as Add-on Treatment as Usual versus Treatment as Usual for Non-Suicidal Self-Injury in Adolescent Outpatients, the Teens Randomized Feasibility Trial. This paper will be the focus of today's podcast. If you're a fan of our Papers podcast series, please subscribe on your preferred streaming platform, let us know how we did with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues. Britt, welcome. Thank you for joining me. Can you start with an introduction about who you are and what you do?
Thank you, Jo. It's an honor to be here talking to you. I'm a senior researcher in child and adolescent mental health services in the capital region, Denmark, and I work in a research unit with more than 50 researchers within different areas of expertise. And I'm the one investigating self-harm and self-injury. So children and adolescents currently are having difficult times, and some develop self-harming behaviors, which is very painful and distressing. And within this theme, I have experiences with conducting both clinical trials and register-based trials, but I think the clinical trials are my favorite. So the idea of providing evidence for interventions to youth in great psychic pain, that is very meaningful work.
Can I ask how you got into this work?
I've been into adult psychiatry and suicide prevention since 2007, and that is where great parts of my work was conducted. But then in 2018, I was transferred to child and adolescent psychiatry, and since children and adolescents currently are, one could say, in a pretty bad shape, then it's very meaningful for me to be down here and doing research within this area, since we see self-harming behavior across all kinds of psychopathologies within these services.
Thank you. The focus is your paper. This is Internet-Based Intervention, Emotion Regulation Individual Therapy for Adolescents as Add-on Treatment as Usual versus Treatment as Usual for Non-Suicidal Self-Injury in Adolescent Outpatients, the Teens Randomized Feasibility Trial, which was recently published in JCPP Advances. Britt, can you give us an overview? What did you look at and why?
The reason why we started this is because evidence-based treatment for specifically non-suicidal self-injury is quite sparse. So we do have evidence in favor of dialectical behavioral therapy, but this is a very extensive and resource-demanding treatment, both for the patients and for services. And it is mainly provided patients at later stages where they had repeated self-harming behavior, where they have a low functional level, and where they may also show personality disorder traits. The idea here was for us to see if we could test an intervention at earlier stages than when self-injury or self-harming behavior has become like more consistent. And since internet-based therapy has not previously been offered within child and adolescent mental health services in the capital region in Denmark, then we preferred to conduct this feasibility study in the first place to see if it was at all doable, if the young persons found the approach meaningful, if they wanted to participate. And then, of course, we also had to test safety procedures. So that's why we designed this feasibility study, applying a randomization procedure, but focusing on feasibility measures as outcomes.
Before we go into some of the findings, I think it would be useful just to take a step back and for you to explain to us, what is the usual treatment for adolescents presenting with non-suicidal self-injury?
The reality is that specific NSSI treatment is very sparse. So sometimes an unsuicidal self-injury behavior is treated as part of the main psychiatric diagnosis for which the child is treated or referred, and which means that this can sometimes be cognitive behavioral therapy, it can be mentalization. And it is provided more often for the anxiety disorder or for the depression state and not genuinely focusing on the non-suicidal behavior. So it's addressed like a site aspect of the like main disease for which they are referred. And one could also say that the shift in this intervention is on emotion regulation, and that seems very helpful.
Well, what is emotion regulation individual therapy for adolescents? Well, and how does it differ from treatment as usual?
So emotion regulation group therapy was developed for younger adults in group therapy and for a bit the population of self-harming younger adults with repeated self-harm, where the shift is instead of focusing on the non-suicidal behavior, the life-threatening aspect of it, or the very self-harming distress within that focus, the focus now here is on how to handle difficult emotions. It is shown several times and very consistently that emotion regulation is the purpose or the motivation that self-harming behavior often serves, which means that if we can help the self-harming patients to shift focus away from the self-harming behavior and then towards both the recognition of difficult emotions and teach them how to regulate these emotions in a more adequate manner, then we can help them to release this need for self-harm. I can also add that this emotion regulation therapy that we provide as internet-based treatment is inspired by elements from CBT and DBT and also ACT and commitment therapy. So it's inspired by all these aspects that are already used in evidence-based treatment, which is in place in services for the time being. But consistently, the focus is on emotions and emotion recognition.
And in this case, it's individual rather than group.
Yeah, it's individual. Yeah. The thing about the individual therapy is that non-suicidal self-injury behaviors, they may bear the risk of like spillover within group settings. So it's preferably for us to have the participants or patients individually. And also in this case, since it's internet-based, then it is an individual program. So our ERITA program consists of an introduction plus 11 modules. And these modules, there's text to read, there is videos to see, there's audios to listen to, and then there are exercises. There would be drags and drops, and there would be like fields to where you can insert personal details and comments and have a dialogue with your individual ERITA therapist. It's a personal development to follow the program. And in this program, there's also a part for the parents. This is a six-module program, which means that every second week, a new module will open for the parents. And they also have this opportunity to have a therapeutic dialogue within the program with the therapists. And it's the same therapists that kind of provide help and support for the adolescent as for the parent. But they have separate individual tracks, so they don't have access to each other's content. And what is shared between the therapist and adolescent is not available for the parent and the other way around also. So it's confidential, but of course it gives the therapist insight in family needs and dynamics.
Can you tell us a little more about the methodology used for this study?
So since this had never been like provided or tried out before within mental health services for children and adolescents in Denmark, we had to see if it was doable at all. So that was our main focus. And therefore, the feasibility outcomes that we focused on, that was the rate of participants fulfilling inclusion criteria and agreeing to participate, consenting to participate, which means that they were randomized, the randomization rate, you can say. Then the compliance rate, we decided that compliance would be for the participant to follow at least 6 out of these 11 modules. And then in order for us to prepare for a large-scale trial, a very important outcome also would be how many would attend follow-up assessment, because that is, of course, very essential to obtain data for a randomized clinical trial to see if we should detect any effect of this. So that was very essential. If a lot of the participants were not agreeing to participate in the follow-up interview, then wouldn't be doable. And also in this preparation of a large-scale trial, we applied a randomization procedure even in the feasibility design, just also to get an impression of how the families and the adolescents reacted to the randomization procedure.
Well, you obviously did something right, because previous reviews that have investigated the use of digital interventions for people with non-suicidal self-injury have suggested that young people lose interest and do not complete the therapeutic intervention. That wasn't the case with your study. I believe you saw a 90% completion, which exceeded your preset criteria for feasibility. What did you do right? Can you elaborate?
Yeah. First, I would like to say that in total, we included 30 participants with and also participating parents. So we allocated 15 to each arm. We lost 2 to follow up in the experimental group and only 1 in the standard group, which is like not very much. And they were lost like to, as you say, lack of interest, no harmful events. And we found that 54% of the eligible families, they agreed or consented to participate. And 87%, they fulfilled or completed more than 6 out of 11 modules. And as you say, 90% talked to me at follow-up at the blinded outcome assessment at end of treatment. And one thing I would say was essential here, that was both the preparation when including the families. We firmly described the procedures within participating in a trial. I know all trial conductors do so, but we firmly described the process from baseline to follow up for the participants. And then I think one of the very essential things, that is the therapist guidance, which is very, very essential. I think without the alliance of the therapists, then we would expect, as you say, participants to lose interests. I think if you kind of leave youth or adolescents or with an app for themselves to navigate, then I think it's totally different from what we did and how we provided it, because we were in close contact, though it was in writing, with the participants on an individual level and providing support for their individual needs. And then another aspect, Joe, about internet-based dialogue or therapy, that is, when it comes to non-suicidal self-injury, it is a very sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. And the adolescents, they will know very soon that when they start sharing this with potential significant others, it risks creating drama. So this idea about being able to describe how you feel and your actions, but with no drama, and doing it in writing where you don't like are face to face with the reaction, where you also have to take care of either your parent or your therapist, that may also be very, very essential. And then again, I think the shift away from limiting access to dangerous means and focusing on emotions as something we all have, and actually the fact that emotions, they can help us, they serve a purpose, also the very difficult emotions we can learn from.
Can we look at some of the findings? What were the key points that stood out for you?
So we were very, very grateful to see that more than half would participate of the eligible families. So the compliance rate was also very important. I mean, since in psychiatry, we don't have any x-rays, we don't take any blood tests. So how can we actually measure if the participants like take the medication or eat the pill? We can do this to see how, in this case, follow the modules opened up for them. And while providing internet-based therapy, the participants, they make electronic footprints. So we could kind of monitor their work and their worksheets and their time spent and their actions on the platform, which was also very, very helpful. And then the whole 90% participating in the follow-up assessment was also very, very important for us.
Britt, is there anything else in the paper that you'd like to highlight?
I think I would like to highlight that the part of the therapist alliance, that is very important. But since this was just a feasibility trial, as I said, with 15 participants allocated to the experimental arm, we didn't have like power enough to look into these things. But after having conducted the feasibility trial, we also conducted a qualitative study for those participants exposed to the Rita treatment. And there we learned that the therapist support and motivation to follow the program is very, very essential and important.
As you say, the teens feasibility trial was carried out. It was a feasibility trial, but it was carried out, I understand, in preparation for a large scale trial. So what happens next?
Now we're conducting a large scale trial, a teens multi-site trial, where we are planning to recruit families from four Danish regions. We have five regions in Denmark in total, but four of them are participating. And in the capital region, Denmark, we have now included 77 participants. And we start recruiting from Region South next month, and then for the two subsequent regions to follow during summer. So we're very, very hopeful. And of course, all the little, like, how do you say, defaults or whatever we investigated or detected during the feasibility trial, we have adjusted for this multi-site trial.
I appreciate that this was a feasibility trial, but from what you know so far, what is your hunch? Do you envisage that internet-based emotion regulation individual therapy for adolescents will be a valuable addition to treatment as usual for adolescents engaging in non-suicidal self-injury?
I can say, so if we find effect, so if we provide evidence in favor of this internet-based intervention, then I am sure it will be considered. Because it's an intervention at early stages, we can help prevent these adolescents from having a worse course within the non-suicidal track. And I also think that in this case, the ERITA therapists are able to treat much more patients than a face-to-face therapist. Of course, there are also participants here who did not do their homework and a lot of time was used to motivate them to do so. But nonetheless, you can treat much more patients in an adequate and manner that makes sense to the children and the adolescents as well. I'm sure we have a tool here. And I also think, so for the time being, as it is now within services, depending on the psychopathology, we already now provide little videos, links with videos, for instance, with psychoeducation. That could be for parents with a child that has been assessed with autism disorders, for instance. So these little videos and online approaches, learning, giving people skills is not new, but treatment as such has never been provided before. So I definitely think services will consider implementing it. That's for sure.
Is there anything else in the pipeline that you'd like to share with us?
We are finalizing writing the manuscript from the qualitative study, and we're looking much forward to share that also on international conferences. And then, of course, we're looking forward to share with you when a multi-site trial has been conducted.
finally, Britt, what is your take-home message for our listeners?
One of the take-home messages is that internet-based therapy is doable and safe, also among severely distressed patients with self-harming or self-injurious behavior within services, as long as they're closely followed and guided by a therapist and not just left alone with an app. And then I also think that the parent part of the program is very important. The parents indeed also benefit from the parents' part, and the ability to share their concerns and distress with the therapists regarding this subject also very sensitive to them. And they are like asking themselves the question, what did I do wrong? How didn't I manage my responsibility as a parent? And we can help them take this burden away. So I also think their therapeutic process and attention is very, very important.
Excellent. Thank you so much. For more details on Dr. Britt Mauthorst, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelled A-C-A-M-H. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.